Kate Messner's newest novel, Wake Up Missing, has all the qualities you want in a thriller. Deceit, signs taken to the extremes, and characters that you root for, especially when it looks like there's no hope. Messner has taken two very prominent issues ripped from the headlines and combined them into a fast-paced cranial feast as she explores concussions and gene therapy.
I love science and am fascinated by the idea of technology and how far is too far. I mean, we live in a culture right now, a society where things are changing so quickly. And the question of should we be doing something just because we can do something is one that I have thought a lot about. There's actually a TED Talk by Juan Enrique that puts forward the idea that we are perhaps even evolving into a new species because of our ability to manipulate ourselves. And it deals with this issue of, genetic engineering and how far is too far. There's a lot of talk about how we may have seen our last Olympic Games without gene doping, without people literally modifying their genetic makeup to be better performers. All that stuff has always fascinated me, and this seemed like a great way to explore those ideas.
And you're combining it with the reports that we are seeing so much more often now about concussions.
Right, and that's a huge issue. I have the mother of two student athletes. It's a constant concern for parents, even in sports that you wouldn't normally think of as sports that involve concussions. And schools are much more aware of it now than they ever have been. They have concussion tests before a kid even begins a sport so that they have a baseline to figure out if there's been a head injury. Just watched one of my daughter's friends in a video do a back walkover on the balance beam and go right onto her back and jerk her head back. We need that awareness of these injuries, and it is a hot topic right now. So that idea seemed to be an interesting starting place because, well, first of all, when you're in middle school, you're not quite yourself because so much is changing, and it's easy to feel like you've left parts of you behind. And then you add a head injury on top of that, and the missing memories and the confusion and the uncertainty about, what did I say and what did I see, it seemed like a great way to set up that sort of uncertainty that would make a kid vulnerable to people with the wrong intentions.
And that brings us to our main character, Kat. The way that you have her trying to figure out how she belongs, how she wants to get back to her old self, and also her parents' reactions to wanting the same thing but not wanting to feel as if she let them down because she isn't the same Kat.
Right. And I think that's, as I mentioned, in her case, Kat is a kid who's just started middle school and a lot of the things that go along with it, playing a sport. And you really are trying to figure out who you are and who you were last year in elementary school and how those two people fit together into this new human. So that creates a certain sense of uncertainty in her. And in middle school kids, I taught middle school for 15 years, the nicest middle school kids make choices sometimes that they regret and treat people in ways socially that they feel badly about later. And that, I think, leaves a kid questioning, who am I and who do I want to be? So with a concussion on top of this, I think she's feeling lost before the story even starts. So to have her in that mindset and then have this threat of very literally losing her sense of self kind of heats things up.
And everybody brought to Dr. Ames and this place called ICANN that's supposed to help them fix the injury that has happened because of the concussion. The hope that is there that they can become who they were again, it creates so much hope for the reader as well. And that other shoe was going to drop, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It does. And I think, you talk about things that make us vulnerable. Hope makes us really vulnerable. And that sense of desperation that they've tried everything and this is the miracle clinic. And the fact that the clinic is employing some really effective techniques to help these kids see their headaches diminish and get their memories back and things like that. A lot of what they're doing at this clinic in the story is real concussion science. There are techniques that are being used at research centers around the country right now, particularly with sports injuries. So there is real progress being made, which only feeds that hope and I think makes the kids more vulnerable to the secret, what's really going on.
The other character, Ben, comes and starts this program and this therapy the same time that Kat has. And there are four other teenagers, two of which have been there longer than the others. And it's interesting how Kat realizes that there really aren't that many people there. And she thought there would be more people going through this process because it seems to be such a miracle cure for them.
Right. And I think that's one of the first warning flags for her is, wouldn't this be a bigger clinic? Wouldn't there be more people here? When in reality, this is a clinic that, you know, has established its reputation as a leader in treating head injuries, but is going in a different direction now and has a very small select number of subjects that it is taking in that direction. So that's indeed one of her first warning signs that everything is not quite right at the clinic.
But Dr. Ames is so nice, and he talks with her and the other patients, walks them through the three different phases that they'll have to complete to help them regain the tissue in their brains, make them better, that it just seems that he's doing something good for them.
And he's a classic predator. I mean, that's what any kind of a child predator is going to do, is going to befriend a kid and build that trust. And particularly, you know, Dr. Ames is drawn to Ben because I think he sees a need in Ben and, you know, a hole inside that needs filling. And he provides that kind of, you know, a fatherly relationship. And he steps in and provides something that Ben hasn't had so that he is more willing to trust him and believe what he says. So, and it's chilling. He is a nice guy. He is very charismatic. And he's a pretty classic predator.
And on the flip side, you have Dr. Gunther, who just seems nervous all the time, and the reader doesn't really know what to make of him either.
Dr. Gunther, in my mind, is a victim in some ways, too. He's a scientist who has his own issues. He's sick, and he is being manipulated. Some people in that situation would stand up, and the last thing that they would do is hurt someone else to benefit personally. That's not Dr. Gunther. You know, he's a victim in some ways, but he's also very culpable for what he's done. Don't want to give away too much.
And also, the location of this place is actually just quite perfect. It's in the Everglades, and the only way they can get there is by fan boat.
Right, and there are former military sites that are actually in the Florida Everglades. The Everglades, just one of the places on Earth that is pretty near and dear to my heart. I've spent a fair amount of time in Southwest Florida, and places that are beautiful and dangerous just draw me in. And so the Everglades fits that perfectly. I chose that setting for a couple of reasons. One is, yeah, the swamp makes for a pretty amazing survival story. But two, we're in this sort of battle with technology versus nature on a day-to-day basis. And the Everglades, I think, portrays that maybe more than anywhere else I've ever seen. You know, this is a place that, through everything Florida has been through, insists on being wild. And if you spend any time there, there is very much a feeling that in places, nature is still very much winning. And I thought that was pretty powerful, too.
It is, because in a way, it's like the teenagers, you know, it's their personalities and them wanting to remain free despite what is happening at this clinic.
Exactly. And I hope there are a lot of parallels there. Like I said, I've spent an awful lot of time kayaking and hiking in the Everglades and experienced some of the things that the kids in the book experience in terms of paddling past an alligator or coming face to face with a cottonmouth on the trail. And that balance between danger and beauty, I think, is something that we see with teenagers and their personalities, too.
And speaking of personalities, one of the patients there, Sarah, who is on phase two, and they're all going to start phase three, but she and Quentin are further along. But then there's Trent, and he's already started phase three, but she feels that there's something wrong, that she hasn't seen him in a while, and she just said he's such a funny and personable person that she just doesn't understand why he wouldn't come to her and just say hi, or she wouldn't see him around, which is another thing that obviously gets Kat's hackles up.
Right, and Sarah likes him, too. And so there is that sense of uncertainty, because when you're a teenager and you have one of those first crushes, there are a lot of questions hanging out there, and that's something that Ben takes advantage of. It's like, you know, maybe he's not that into you, and maybe that's the case. So really, when I was writing this book, I worked hard to sort of pepper the story with that uncertainty at every turn. Maybe there's something wrong, but maybe this is a teenage guy who's, you know, changed his mind and he's interested in something else, and maybe you were bugging him, Sarah. So that sense of uncertainty, to me, was really what drove the story. And the fact that these are characters, all of them, all of these teenagers, have suffered head injuries. And that makes you an unreliable reporter of what you see and what you hear, even to yourself sometimes. What was it that really happened? What did I hear? There are holes in the memory. And so Kat doesn't even feel reliable to herself a lot of the time when she's trying to piece things together.
It's those horrible headaches that she gets, and she says, well, maybe I'll think about it later, or I wonder if I'll remember what I just heard or what I experienced.
Right. And not only that, when we are in a scary situation, one of the first things we tell ourselves to try and be okay is, oh, it's not that bad. This is going to be okay. I'm making things up. This is something that I think we all do. It's part of human nature, and sometimes it serves us well because we are worrying about nothing. But in those situations where there's something very real and very awful to worry about, putting off facing it can be a real disservice.
Well, it is an amazing book. The name of it is Wake Up Missing. Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much, Katie. It was great talking with you.
Kate Messner's new novel is Wake Up Missing. It is published by Walker Books. You can meet Messner and three other authors this Saturday, September 28th at 4 p.m. as part of Oblong Books' League of Extraordinary Readers series for middle grade readers. This month's theme is Thrilling Adventures. Again, that's 4 p.m. tomorrow, September 28th at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck, New York. Just click on the link for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Alone, I find the